Yeah, so that's basically finished this part, and I want to make a little bit advertisement for reading, where you could continue reading. So there is a very nice book which is already on the market for some time from Utting and Legia, Practical Model-Based Testing. This book is for those people which really want to get an idea of the entire, you know, area of model-based testing, because it tackles not one particular tool or one particular approach, but it deals with a couple of them. Spec Explorer is also described in this book in one chapter. However, be careful, it's the old version, the so-called Spec Explorer 2004 version, which is described there, which was developed by MSR, and lots of things have changed since then. And then there is a Jackie et al. Book, which some of you know, which model-based software testing and analysis with C#, which is close to what we're doing in Spec Explorer. It's based on the tool N-model, which is basically comes from the same lab, N-model, than Spec Explorer, but N-model was explicitly developed for this book as a freeware tool, a free source tool, which you can ship together with this book, so to say, that people can play with it. But over time, this has been a little bit diverged, so the tools are a little bit different. But anyway, this book is highly recommendable because it gives a nice overview of this idea of modeling in the style like we discussed here, with using C# programs and guarded updates rules. So we have an ever-growing documentation set, thanks to many people which work on that. And we have also the forum and the blog, and we actually are always interested in getting questions where we have the feeling that not only one user but a couple of users are interested in that, so we can create a blog entry for that and describe it there. If you are interested on the research side or deeper going concepts, there are many papers on my research webpage or on Nico's research webpage which describe where the technology comes from, its semantic foundations, and so on and so on. That's it. Is there any more questions at this point?
Just know both those books are in the Microsoft Library.
The question was whether the books are in the Microsoft Library.
Yeah, they are.
They are. Actually, the command was they are.
So you mentioned that you use symbolic computation, but the few other model-based testing tools that I've seen, they don't do that. So why did you pick symbolic computation? What was the advantage?
You mean models computation or model computation?
Symbolic exploration.
Exploration. So the question is, why did we choose symbolic exploration, which supposedly, like you're saying, other tools don't? So first I want to correct that. Actually, other tools do that. There's maybe not inside of Microsoft, but there is a very good model-based testing tool, which I like quite a lot, and it's coming from a Finnish company, which is now also based in the U.S. It's called Conformic, the company, and the tool is called Qtronics. And it does on-the-fly testing and also developed for communication protocols, and it's also based on symbolic execution. And so it's actually the idea of using symbolic execution for model-based testing has been around in the community for a long, long time. Why we have chosen it is because we think this is automatic calculation of parameter values in particular. It's a very powerful approach. To say it a little bit more abstractly, a big problem in modeling is you describe a certain system, but the system is always in an environment where it's running. And the way how the environment is exposed in our case of models is actually one way is the parameters of the actions, because the parameters are provided by the environment. No? And so one way to deal with this unknown environment is to make it symbolic. And the real part, which I haven't shown you here, because it's not yet running, which where we actually want to go, is also to generate the parameters automatically for the stimuli, not only for the events, also for the stimuli. And that's then very similar like what the PEX tool does. The PEX is a white box testing tool, because we could actually, with symbolic exploration, figure out all parameter combinations you need to cover all branches or all requirements or whatever of your model. Then you don't need to provide any parameter domains at all anymore. So that's kind of the long-term goal. No? Another reason is just efficiency. You know? So it may be sounding strange, but when we involved the theorem prover or constraint solver in our tool, it actually became much more efficient. And why? Because what we needed to do before, when we have one rule which has a large set of parameters, for each of the parameter combinations, we need to execute the rule again, say 50 times. No? Now we only need to execute the rule once, symbolically, and then after we have executed symbolically, we do all this parameter combination expansion. So it's actually faster also. At least in many cases, in average, it was much faster. There are some cases where it gets slower. In average of our test suite, it was faster. Yes?
I just wondered, in that earlier video, you mentioned that you were going to work on the UML diagrams and
So the question was that it was mentioned in earlier videos and also in papers that we are working on UML diagrams, and we haven't stopped doing that. So that's on our list of features which we would like to add to the tool, in particular because now Visual Studio comes with much better support for UML than in earlier versions. It becomes even more interesting. We are very interested in hearing concrete user feedback for this feature, like someone would tell us, so you know, if we would have that feature, it would be much easier for us to get model-based testing installed in our group or company or whatever. The truth is that at this point we don't have the clear indication that's the case. No? So the value proposition is, if we would add something like UML, we can get other stakeholders doing modeling, like PMs like Nico. No, Nico is a very technical PM, so he would prefer to model in C#. But the idea is like business analysts or something like this. And so people which are not so technical would now use the diagrams and start doing models. So people which write down requirements would do the diagrams and. So this is just a proposition, a value proposition, and we don't have enough data at this point to make this a priority one of our features. But it's on the feature list, and we know how to do it. We have created prototypes, etc. No? And we will come back to that. And all kind of features which we can add to the tool depends very much on the community, how strongly they are requested, because the community requests will drive Microsoft to satisfy features.
So you said something on the future that you're planning is the on-the-fly testing that you want to enable in Spec Explorer, right?
Yeah.
Currently, are there any groups trying out another on-the-fly model-based testing tool along with Spec Explorer together?
Yeah, so the question is, so first of all, we have said that we will add on-the-fly testing. And then the question was whether there are other tools which already do on the fly and which could be used together with Spec Explorer. And the answer is, so first of all, on the fly has for us priority one. So that's like something which we most likely will add very soon.
Re-add,
actually. No? The second thing is, I cannot talk about all the tools which are internally available, as you may know. But there are some tools internally which do on-the-fly testing, and it's not completely smoothly working to take a model from the one tool and use it in the other because there are conceptual differences. But in principle, they are quite similar, actually. So it shouldn't be too hard. Unfortunately, the principle doesn't help you so much. And it's a little bit like every programming language, imperative programming language, is based on the von Neumann machine, so you should be easily able to take a say, a Java program and run it under the .NET? Well, not really. No? So there are a little of subtleties in the tools or so which don't make it so straightforward to do that. Yes?
When you use Visual Studio 2010, the syntax and the API were different. How much pain it would be for us to transfer our current Spec Explorer syntax and the current code we're writing right now to match right. with the new one?
Good question. So the question was, so they are already using the version for Visual Studio 2008, and we have said before there are some changes in the version for 2010, and how much pain it would be to go from the old version of Spec Explorer and Visual Studio to the new one. So the answer is, from the Spec Explorer viewpoint, we have tried to make this as smooth as possible. First of all, so the old features are still there, they are just deprecated. So You can use a model which was developed for Spec Explorer 2008 and run it with the new version. You will get some warnings, like this attribute has been deprecated. No? Then you will not be blocked, then you can slowly upgrade. No? And we also...
That will be a search and replace change, find and replace on the names of the attributes, for example.
The names of the that's actually the only changes which we're really looking at are the names of the attributes, and some names of the library functions like requires and so on is now condition.isTrue and so on, no? contracts.requires. And as said, so this old stuff is still there, but we will cut it at some point, no? So that's the usual migration plan. So I think it should be relatively smooth. The problem is more, but I would suppose, is that you have to get your entire team now work with Visual Studio 2010, which I would highly recommend to do it, no? Because it's just a better Visual Studio, and it's also is now the release. Tomorrow, the release candidate will come out, as far as I know, or very soon. So it's the future, no? So, and at some point, we will, or actually already at this point, we will not longer do bug fixes for the 2008 version of Spec Explorer. Yes?
For the teams that are just now onboarding Spec Explorer, what's the help and support available with at least the initial step of creating a model and making sure that it's correct and correct?
Right. Actually, I would like to give the microphone to Nico. Usually he would answer that, but I can try to say what he would say, and he can correct
perhaps
me. Or I come just close to you.
Perhaps you can take it offline, because
no,
it's internal to Microsoft. And
no, that's a general question about support. So speak to me.
So Wolfgang, you want to
create your own Spec Explorer model, and you want to know where you can
I
want to
know
support.
How you can help me, because I'm really concerned about that I'm blocked somehow and I can't continue working.
We have several support channels, and they're actually community channels. Like, there's a public forum, there's an internal distribution list here at Microsoft, and it's not just the Spec Explorer engineering team that will provide support. Usually, if you use these channels, you'll get support from the community, people who are already using the tool.
Cool. Oslo?
Yeah, I have some.
So the question was, how is this related to Oslo and M, which has been presented at the last two PDCs, I think? So currently we don't have any plan to synchronize directly with Oslo, but you don't know what will happen in the future. Yeah?
I guess my question is, how would you want to market this tool? How would you want to sell this to test managers or management within tests to actually start using, implementing onboarding? I mean, aside, if you were to use three bullet points, what would you say? How can I go back to my team and say, this is awesome, I need to do it, help me come up with that story?
So the question was, how could you go to your team and convince them that it would be great and to use Spec Explorer? And now I would need Peter on my side, but no. So I think he's just going through that process. So I think one very good approach is actually to use this first talk which we had and the material which was presented there. So the application of Spec Explorer in the protocol testing program. I'm not sure whether you attended the first session, but there is, for example, some statistic data about the efficiency, which we could measure in a big case study. And so these are the numbers, I think, in which test management is really interested. Does it pay off? No? And to be clear, I mean, you really need to prove this to people, because testers, in particular those which are here in the room and now listen to this, have the tendency to think model-based testing is cool. And indeed, it is cool. No? But your test management doesn't pay you for just using a cool methodology, which is maybe more fun than another methodology. So you need to be more efficient. So test the same or more stuff for less money. And in the protocol testing program, we just, I think, saved about, I don't know, millions and millions of dollars, 50 man years or so, by, according to our measurements at least, by applying model-based testing.
So you were able to test more scenarios, more permutations in a shorter amount of time?
In this case, the question was whether we were testing more in the shorter amount of time. In this particular case, we were testing the same, basically, maybe sometimes a better quality, but that's subjectively, in less time. Which would, in theory, allow you to spend your QA resources in other areas. No? Because we should be clear is that model-based testing or functional testing is not the only thing you need to do for QA. No? So you need to do other kinds of testing which you won't do with model-based testing. But you can use these other resources in various ways, saving money or testing more.
Do you have any data around what number of bugs and what type of bugs you found during what milestone of your execution? Because that's usually a good indicator.
Right.
How many bugs did you find? What's the priority, and how early did you find it?
So the question was whether we have any data about what kind of bugs we found and how early we found them. And that is not easy to answer. In our particular project context, we measured the success in coverage of the requirements which we have figured out. We measured it in code coverage, no? And we kind of succeeded if the code coverage. We don't have actually a measurement of TDIs.
You have how we found 10,000 TDIs from testing.
Yeah, but we don't break them down, I think, for modeled and non-modeled. TDIs is a bug name for a technical document, no? We call technical document issue. That's how document bugs are called. So we don't have that at this point. No? But I think it's actually much more useful, the number we have, in my opinion, than measuring the bugs. Is what we measured is a cost to test one single requirement, no? And you have to test this anyway, whether you find a bug or not, right? I mean, you have to have a test plan. You need to know what you test, no? If you have a great developer team, then all your testing will not find any bug, no? So that's good, no? If not, then you will find many bugs. But anyway, you have to construct the test cases, no? And what we measured is basically construction. Cost of constructing the test cases on a systematic, in a systematic way. Okay, so thank you very much for attending this, and we hope you will be productive and have fun, and can convince your management in using Spec Explorer.